Hello, this is Matthew Kasovitz. I'm the director of the movie Gothica, and we have with us DP. What's your name?
Matthew Libatique, cinematographer.
Yes, Matthew Libatique, cinematographer. Maddie is a DP who worked with Darren Aronofsky's movies and very moody DP. That's what we were looking for that movie. Play with the mood a lot and scare the people. Scary movies are, very director-driven and of course, visually are very important to scare people. To do that with the right mood, and you can see from the first frame that mood is there, and you can start to freak out now.
Like he always does.
I mean, the challenge definitely was, and the mandate at the beginning of prep, which was very short, was to create the scariest movie we could, which is something I never really experienced, and that was just what, in every meeting we ever had, I don't know if they were meetings, but we would talk about making a scary film.
Yeah, when we... The whole process of the movie went so fast that Joel Silver called me and in Paris, and I had to jump on in a plane 2 days after to start prep for 2 months in Montreal and start shooting right after. So when you say like meetings, the meetings were actually done while we were prepping the movie, and with Maddie we just we invented the movie while we were prepping it. We didn't have time to really know what we were doing before we actually worked on it.
I tried to know what I wanted to do beforehand, but I never got there.
Yeah. Maddie needs a lot of prep, inner prep, and notes, and take notes. I'm more instinctive, and I was watching him like taking notes of about everything the way he wanted to do it, and I thought it was crazy because we had to go, and I remember the day we started to shoot. I told him, like, yeah, man, forget about the notes. We gotta go. We gotta jump. And I think it worked quite well because you prepped as much as you could, right? And but you had to work with instincts too, and not being scared to try things and go different.
I think that's enough.
And that scene.
Well, I mean. Which scene? You're talking about the scene we're watching right now.
Yeah, I'm talking about that scene, which is, for me, when I saw that, the first shots of Penelope and Allie in the very... When I saw that, I knew that we had a good movie from the first frame, because the mood is there, and the light is so beautiful, and at the same time, it's realistic, it's stylistic, it's everything that... we talked about or we wanted to get, and you got it in that scene. You remember that we were very scared because we have like two of the most beautiful women in the world.
I wasn't scared of the two most beautiful women in the world. I was just scared of lighting them.
Exactly. How to make them look good without being just two beautiful women on a set, in a movie set.
Right. No, it's difficult because you don't want to be gratuitous. You don't want to light them gratuitously. You want to light them for the atmosphere of the film.
Yeah.
The atmosphere was everything. If we didn't have atmosphere, we didn't create an atmosphere in color and contrast and whatnot, photographically and even in tone, performance-wise, we would never have accomplished anything.
Performance-wise, the girls were very... they went our direction, and they are part of that too, because when you, they have to be in sync with what we do technically, and or we have to be in sync with them. I don't know which one is first, but they bring so much scare in the movie by just being them and just being good actresses. And at first, I don't know about you, Maddie, but I didn't expect that we get as much as we got from them. And especially from that scene, which was, it's always complicated to do a scene with two persons sitting at a table and nothing else but talking, and especially starting a movie like that.
Hey.
Sorry. I need to cross-reference some files with you on Monday. How's your morning?
Check with Anna. She'll fit in.
Sorry.
I'm not discharging her, period. If you want to pursue this, sir, have a judge...
This is the only warm part of the film.
So then she's mine.
We wanted to make that said almost like it's totally different from everything from the rest, because the rest is very blue and very gray and dark.
Chloe, she's embellishing a rape story again. She's
and that office, which is, we don't know that character yet, but for those who've seen the movie already, he's the bad guy.
I think it has something to do with her stepfather, possibly even remorse, but instead of assessing the memory and accepting it, she just...
Did we talk about what kind of mood or what kind of
meanderings,
ambiance we wanted to be that office? Or we just got there. I don't remember.
No, we just got there. We just got there. You know, the thing is that we knew that it came at the end of this title sequence that was setting up the entire space. And what your idea was, to, you know, start that first scene with Penelope and introduce her character and introduce the setting, and then have Hallie actually walk through the entire space so that when we revisited everything later in the film, everybody knew where we were.
Yeah, we knew what the geography of the place, yeah. Because that prison and the whole universe of that movie is, for me, never existed. You'll see later in the movie you have like you see a license plate from Connecticut, but for me it was always like a place that doesn't exist, because a prison like that doesn't exist, and we don't see a real, you know, real cities or anything like that. So we had to set that universe and that world and make it totally logical.
Image of herself.
Who are you in all this?
To build that prison, because we build that prison. You know, the cinematographer and me, we build the set by putting different sets together and making that space huge and coherent. Yeah.
I can see both of you, so I'm God.
So we remember, I was totally freaked out about the walking of Hallie in the beginning. That was one of the most complicated things to get, the walking around, to make it logical.
Yeah, to make it logical and just make the geography make sense, and then end up where we end up in this office.
Yeah, well, now we got the kiss. yeah, we're at the kiss. Yes.
You know, the thing is, I have to give a lot of credit to Grace.
Yeah, oh yes, we got to talk about Grace Walker.
Sorry.
Grace Walker.
Grace Walker, which Australian set designer who worked on Ghost Ship, which was a Dark Castle movie, and also worked on the Mad Max movies. Grace understood right away what we wanted to do.
He really helped with the geography of it, and the thing that he did that really impressed me about the beginning of the film, which is what we had a lot of problems with, was that he set that hallway apart from the rest of the institution.
Yeah.
So right away you're taking the administration part of it and you're giving it a feeling, and then the rest of the, you know, the patients and the doctors like Miranda and Pete, who's played by Robert Downey Jr., have to work in sort of the lower depths of this facility.
Yeah, yeah. So where that scene with Ali, Rock, and Robert, the first time they meet. And we had very little scenes to set all the characters and everything that will make the story after. So the characters and the way they interact was very important. We had to do that in the shortest amount of time that we could afford, because it's a scary movie after all, not a psychological thriller. Which it became a psychological thriller after a while.
Circumcised.
Inside. We have Shelley for observation. Why? What happened?
She had another attack.
What'd you do? Upper mids?
Yeah, 25 milligrams.
But this shot, you know, it's the shot of the corridor.
That dose is way too hot.
With, you can see the shot, if you look at it again, where you see the corridor with the sails that we'll see later on. That corridor wasn't there. We had to put it digitally there so that we could understand that the sail is next to her office, which she will go there later on. So all this we had to work very hard to get it right. That was big, big thing.
Well, it should be said that there's a lot, there are a great deal of effects in this film that are...
That nobody sees.
I mean, you look at that shot, that was a green screen that was only 4 feet away from the rest of the wall.
Yeah.
And they had to digitally recreate that entire corridor by shooting digital stills of the actual set.
It's a mix of sets and actual locations. This is a location. The, our office was a set. In that location, we had to put that green screen to fake another location. The pool is, we shot at like 3 months after. And it's the mix of all that allowed us to create our own universe and our own world. Pool that we shot in LA because we had to shoot that pool in Montreal, but Hallie broke her arm and she couldn't swim. Those shots of her swimming.
Coming out of the water.
Yeah, getting out of the water and all that. But we had to shoot in LA.
Night, Joe.
Hey. How many laps, Doug?
55.
Which was actually quite good because we were able to think about it a little more. And you know, I have to give credit to Pete Romano, who came out, who's the premier underwater cinematographer in the world.
In the world, yeah. Yeah, he made us look good.
Yeah, exactly.
All that is also part of a mix of, you know, when she gets out of the penitentiary, it's a mix of set and real location.
All that education.
And then with Robert coming in that we introduced, his character a little earlier, we see that there is something in between them.
What's her name? It was like all of my days.
Because the movie was also about, okay, it's a whodunit. For, you know, she's going to be not knowing exactly what happened and maybe somebody put her in that situation. So we had to try to make everybody look suspicious. And Robert is the perfect character, perfect guy to put in that situation.
Yeah, he looks suspect.
Yeah, he's the usual suspect. He managed to get that, and I didn't really see it when we were shooting it.
When did you ever listen to the boss?
But by little things like that, just little looks.
He's not perfect. He's not smooth. Like, his performance has the nuances. Like, he leans up against the car like he really wants to come inside the car with her, you know?
Yeah, you don't know. You think he's in love with her, he wants to kiss her, and at the same time, you don't really know what is he hiding, or is he like in an agenda, or is he just like in love with her? And that will bring a lot of, even for her, not knowing, you know, maybe he killed her husband to get her. Robert was perfect for that because he didn't have to do a lot. He managed to do that in a very subtle way, very subtle way.
I think he's such a craftsman that I think that it seems effortless. Just his mannerisms. He knows how to work his natural mannerisms to every performance.
Severe showers all over northern Connecticut and New Hampshire. Projections are on the rising of rain in Lennox County.
Flooding throughout Lennox County and with foreclosure.
Sorry, man, McKinley, the road's closed.
Why? What's going on?
I got this, Sterling.
Sinkhole, man.
So this is the sinkhole that we had to actually dug. And that old, you know, working under the rain at night.
Hey, you know that bridge that Doug and I fish at sometimes?
Yeah, the little white one?
That's the one.
Yeah.
This was a tough day, as you remember.
Yeah, it was a tough day. Very tough day. We had a fight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, we had a big fight.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because, you know, working especially in Canada, it's very cold, and the rain is a huge setup. To feel that with rain,
you're home.
You know,
had
rain everywhere,
so you
couldn't change the shots.
Minutes,
it's complicated to move.
How was Willow Creek?
It's very frustrating.
Very frustrating, yeah. And time-consuming,
okay?
Too.
Well, you have lightning, you have rain. I mean, the thing is, the shot previous where they're walking out of the penitentiary, that we learned the most important lesson in working with that type of gear, because we surrounded ourselves with this immense, humongous gear.
Yeah.
And we couldn't move the camera.
And we couldn't move the camera, because as soon as you change the axis of the camera, then you see everything.
You have to move a crane or a condor or a rain tower.
You see all that setup. So, and that scene was so important because it's the first apparition of the ghost. And we didn't want it to make it look ghostly. Because we didn't want people to understand, is it a real girl in the middle of the road, or is it, you know, did she appear, or was she there, and suddenly did we didn't see her before? We had to make that and change the mood, and to make that really as scary as we could.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm a doctor.
You know, I didn't want the movie to be a ghost movie from the get-go.
Well, you tried to root her in reality.
Beside her burning, and that's the last moment where we can say, okay, maybe that's part of the nightmare. We don't know. I wanted the audience to be exactly at the same level as she was. But it's exactly what's going on now. She wakes up, she says, what's going on? Where am I? And the audience should be in the same position. So like, what happened? What's going on right now? And now she's back.
This shot's the first shot you explained to me when we met at the Mondrian.
Yeah.
This is the pullback where we reveal the glass.
And that glass, we had the glass really in front of the camera because she had to touch the glass. So we had the glass tracking back with the camera at the beginning and then locking in position so that she can touch it. Because you can't fake that. You can't CGI an actual physical contact. But beside that, we had to... That shot became very complicated.
It was only a 4-foot by 4-foot piece of glass, so they had to create the reflections from the glass above it and below it and then take away the rig that moved the piece of glass.
Yeah.
And we actually zoomed into that shot. It was a Steadicam shot, and there was a little bit of a drift, so we actually zoomed into that to sort of stabilize.
So now we got the scene in the cell. When I read the script, that scene, that first scene was like 10 pages long, and I was very interested because it wasn't a glass cell, it was like a regular cell.
We managed to get the court to grant us a waiver and to transfer it, so anything we just...
And I said, okay, we got like a very small cell with four walls and two people in it. And they're going to talk for 10 minutes. How can I shoot that and make it interesting? I decided to go with the glass wall and like make those cells like observation cells and make them a little more visually interesting, and to be able to play with the reflections and be able to play with that glass wall so that we're going to use a lot after with the ghosts coming in and appearing. And we had a lot of problems with the reflections.
Put in restraints for a day and a half so you wouldn't injure yourself.
You'll never see it, but sometimes we took out the glasses and CGI them back in after.
Well, that was a tough set. I mean, a lot of our sets were really small, so... And Matthew likes to move the camera.
Yeah, that was a game I wanted to play.
I know, but the way you move the camera is you move it in, like, 360 degrees. So the thing to do with a small set is... And, you know, what I learned on this film was that you have to take small sections of wall out. Because it's not like you could take even just half a section of wall, because you're going to end up panning towards that empty space, you know, with the way you set up shots.
You think I'm a rational person?
Yeah, for that cell, we came up with different ideas. First, we wanted to do it totally on a 360 blue screen, a green screen, so that we could CGI the walls after.
You might have.
Yeah. I thought about that. And then we decided to make the walls movable, and like just be able to move the walls while we were shooting, so it couldn't make any sound and it had to be totally smooth.
We actually set that up. We were ready for that.
We did that. We didn't use it as much as I thought because it's way too complicated.
I remember Chloe. I was having my Friday night session with Chloe.
How'd that go?
She was embellishing a rape story.
As much as you can, as a director or as a DP or as a technician, as much as you can think about how you can play with a camera, it's all about the actors and things that you cannot do because the actors won't be able to play and won't be able to act what they should, because you see five people behind the camera moving a wall and putting it back. So you can't really be too technical on a comedy level, because you have to be with the actors.
When he says comedy, he means drama.
Nay, I'm sorry. I'm French, you know.
Don't be sorry, exactly.
No, I'm just being French. And
I learned that through you. That's why when I heard you say it, I was like, oh, he means drama.
What's happened?
And then I decided to go, okay, we have the first part of that scene where we could be, you know, a little more visual with the two of them, like, being apart. And then when they're face-to-face, like, facing each other, then it's all about close-ups. And it's almost like they're talking to us. And Robert is talking to us also. They're looking directly in the camera. I remember the actors were, like, a little, you know, taken aback by that, saying, like, oh, you want me to look directly in the camera to talk directly to the audience? It's like, yeah. I think that's the way to put the audience exactly where they are. And that was the game with the whole movie.
There was a girl.
Is to play with the audience.
No, there was a girl at the bridge. Right, there was some kind of accident.
It's a very audience-driven movie. It's the first one that I do at that level.
It's the last thing you remember about Doug.
And I always put myself in the audience when I'm doing a movie, but I'm used to do very personal movies. This one is less personal.
And why are you using the past tense?
And I had more fun doing it because I only took care of, you know, of the audience and trying to make people laugh and scared. And that's what we're talking about. Remember, Maddie, when you talked about, like, okay, what do you want the movie to... What do you want the audience to get from that movie? I was like, just only scares. I just want them to jump in their seats. That's all I wanted.
It did. Well, that worked.
That worked, yeah.
That part worked.
That part worked.
No! No! No!
Eric!
Ali is a very, very, very strong woman. Very strong. She did things to me like she's strong. You can see her muscle, the way she grabs you, and she's strong and fast. But she's very petite. She's a very petite woman. She was fighting so much, she got so much into the character that she was so into it, she couldn't control herself.
That was shot on reversal film. We tried to take the nightmares to another place, which is something that happens a lot, but we picked reversal to do that with.
Yeah. And that was the first introduction to something strange is going on in her head.
We shot most of those inserts that were in the montage with an IMO.
Yeah.
Remember with the goggles?
Yeah.
With these virtual goggles. And we would just throw the focus in one place and then just move the camera into focus and out of focus, trying to create these scary images that would cut in for like 3 frames.
Yeah, we shot that while we were shooting the other scenes. We shot that with a small camera that we could move very freely around and just make it look as weird as we could. Now we have the scene in the common room, as we called it.
I don't belong
That prison is in Montreal.
You're here.
As soon as I got in Montreal, they showed me that place because they shot like numerous movies there. Spielberg shot there at the beginning of Catch Me If You Can.
No one will listen.
Everybody shot there, and I was, when they offered me that set, I was like, that location, I was, nah, man, everybody shot there. It's like everybody will recognize that location.
Then what are you trying to prove them wrong?
I've seen a lot of movies, but I've never seen that location in a movie before, so we said, okay, let's use it to the maximum and try to juice it, and nobody will recognize it, because usually what directors did, they just use it as a regular prison. We made it totally different, totally, totally coherent, and totally unrealistic at the same time.
Well, it goes a long way. The space goes a long way in the setting, the atmosphere. I mean, we told the audience, we're telling the audience that this is a mental institution or a women's prison, and they have to accept it or not, because we committed to that, you know.
Yeah. It was amazing to see that location, because the movie was called Gothica. It has no reason to be called Gothica. There is nothing gothic in the script itself.
The location gives it a reason to be called Gothica.
Exactly. when we found the sets, we were like, okay, that looks gothic. And the title got us there. And the title was very important, I think. It's always important to work with on the script with a good title. Now we got the scene when the ghost is coming in, she hears the footstep. And that's, for me, is the first scare of the movie. That's what I wanted to play with, is just an actress by herself in a cell, nobody around, there's nothing. And we try to make it as scary as we can with almost nothing, just this. Mist. It's a mist. Those ideas, we redesigned a lot of the scares on sets almost, because when you write a scary movie and somebody else directs it, the scares will not be totally the same. When you have to work on a location, then you have to adapt to that location. And on a scary movie where locations are very important to scare people, we have to change things. Like we have now the camera going around her neck, and pulling out and going through the glass as a ghost floating around her. And, you know, when you're all by yourself and you feel somebody's around, you feel there's something behind you, somebody's looking. And you can feel the hair in the back of your neck rising, and you have a cold sweat. That's what we were trying to get there to.
Logic, primary process. That's what this is. I'm dreaming.
And that was a complicated shot. I didn't think we were going to get it because we were working on that shot while we were shooting it.
I'm not afraid.
Remember?
Well, we shot it. It was a Steadicam shot. I mean, we worked around her with a Steadicam, but we knew we had to get certain things like an insert of her eye with the same movement. And then, our visual effects supervisor, Eric Henry, had to piece it together.
Yeah. We worked with very good producers, too.
Richard Mirisch.
Worked with Susan Levine. And we worked with Rich Mirisch, who took care of all the special effects. And, of course, Joel Silver.
Can't forget Joel Silver.
Who has very, very an amazing force, as we can say, behind us, who totally was with us and wanted us to go as far as we could.
She's great.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Good
she's
girl.
Bronwyn.
Miss Pritchett.
Doing good.
Yeah. Nurse Ratched, right?
Nurse Ratched, yeah. In One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest. Now we have the shower scene. The shower scene, when I read that script and I knew Halle Berry and Penelope Cruz will be in that shower scene, I almost was surprised that I got paid to make that movie. I was ready to go and pay. And but the question was, okay, we got two ways to make a shower scene with naked women. We can make a bad boob movie, you know, with strippers all over the place, and make it very sexy, and try to give what the people want.
Yeah, exactly.
But the movie became so realistic, of course, and the story and the characters were so serious, and make it as realistic as we could. That is a set that we rebuilt totally from the original showers that were at the prison, where we actually wanted to shoot there, but for security reasons we couldn't, and it was too cold. But we redid exactly the same shower. It looks like a Nazi camp shower, but actually it was like that.
Most of these shots are handheld inside the... Inside the shower with the camera and myself getting wet.
Yeah, Maddie was in heaven. Maddie was in heaven. He had a camera on his shoulder. But you were in heaven. No, it was a great moment because we had like those 20 women together for 2 days. Everybody, they all were all naked, and it became so natural, and they were playing. It was really amazing. And at the end, Hallie thanks everybody.
Well, they did an amazing job. Just stand there all day for 14 hours, naked.
Yeah.
Going in and out from cold to the warm water was just exceptional.
Yeah. The blood here is CGI. Part of the blood is CGI. We actually set it up the right way. We did it, but then the blood flew a little too early or too late, so we had to change its CGI. That shower scene was complicated to do.
Yeah.
All the scenes were a challenge.
Very difficult.
All the scenes were a challenge, and we didn't have really a lot of time to think about it. We just had to do it and make as much as we could. I'm surprised when I see it again. We got lucky. We could have really lost it. We could have been totally, you know, scary movies like that. That's one of the reasons why I was.
I can't believe she's lost.
Why I wanted to do the movie is that you're on a thin line in between good and bad taste. You know, in between laughing and scary. You know, it can be really ridiculous if you don't watch yourself.
Hey, Tom. We're fine.
I love that, the way Robert sits down next to her,
right,
in the infirmary. He did a lot of dancing when he was younger, and you could see that, the way he flips his leg when he sits down. I love that. I love that scene. I love that shot.
It's probably one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
I love that scene. I love the way they were together, and she surprised him a lot. Because he's the wild one, and she's more of a more technical, and he's the guy who just, you don't know what he's going to do next. And she came in, and if you watch that scene again, you can see that he is off balance. Because she didn't wait for his cue or anything. She did what she had to do. And he had to arrange around her and what she was saying and the way she was saying it. So you can see that he's a little off balance, but he catches up. And I love that because there's a lot of intimacy in between them. And at the same time, it makes sense. You know, he's talking to a crazy woman, and she doesn't know if she's really crazy or not. And it makes us think that he's a bad guy. And
we simply increase,
same for her. And I love that shot, especially after that mirror. The mirror shots, you have like two mirror shots before when she's waiting by herself. We did it with the double. We had the camera behind the double, and we had the mirror was a little twisted, so it reflected Hallie was like a few meters on the side. So when you have the camera behind her, you should see the camera behind her because she's on reflection in the mirror. But we had the camera behind the double, and she was on the side.
Did you want to?
That was like a little shout out to Hate.
yeah, we did that. I did that in all my previous movies. I play with mirrors all the time. I love that shot. It was a very long shot, and I was scared because I say, oh, this is Hollywood. I'll never get like a minute and a half shot uncut in a Hollywood movie, and we got it because look at that, she's crying on cue, bing, exactly when you need it, exactly when you want it.
Right.
She was amazing. When I saw that, I was like, remember the grips? The grip was crying. I saw a couple of people were like, you know, crying on the set because she was so intense. And Robert was very surprised and to see how deep she got into it. We all fell in love with her, right?
Well, that scene is probably, if you ask most of the crew members of the on this film, they would say this scene is their favorite scene.
Yeah.
The biggest challenge for us was how these dialogue scenes were going to play out. I mean, we knew, you know, you're going to have scares.
Yeah.
If you do your thing in a scary moment, you're doing your thing, and it's like, you know,
I need to talk to you.
It's going to be stylistic, but trying to stylize these, we had a lot of dialogue scenes.
A lot of dialogue scenes.
A lot of information.
What about him, Miranda?
And this one in particular.
I think he's the best doctor
in
treating me.
This one, yeah. That's a scene that I didn't want in the movie because I said, that's totally, you know, I'm not interested. Plus, I wanted to stay inside, but I got to say that Joel insisted for it. And I got to say, yeah, it makes Bernard Hill, it makes him look bad, too.
It makes him look more of a suspect.
Look at that, boom, little look on his face, and you don't know, he might be the bad guy, too. And then she looks up, and you have that famous, I'm shutting the window shot. We had Robert waiting for 8 hours to do that shot. Bing, he was going home. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I waited 8 hours to shoot it, too.
Brenda.
Bernard's great, man. You see him in Lord of the Rings?
Not the last one. Not yet.
Oh, you gotta check him out.
Oh, yeah. How are they treating you?
Like I'm crazy, Teddy.
I love that scene. On the directing level, I love that scene. I think it's very well directed.
Well, we also, I mean, use a lot of foreground. You saw in the first scene, we used the cage as a foreground. It's like just the sense of being incarcerated. And with, we wanted to use that fence in that exterior scene so that we knew Hallie was, or Miranda was in lockup. And then Bernard representing the outside, what she used to have, you know.
We haven't even had a time to investigate her. We can't have
Now she's with her lawyer. And I was hard on you, Maddie, because if you look at that shot, you can actually see the whole set.
Yeah.
So you couldn't put any lights on the stand or anything. You had to light it from outside. And you managed to do it without annoying
my
camera movement.
Teddy, why would I do that? I mean, maybe one of us...
I was surprised. I was very surprised by the way you worked.
If anybody escaped from here, that person would have a motive. And yeah, I was there. And I would scream. I was in shock. Maybe I went
But it was
shock.
Nice to see...
Miranda.
Also, the actors didn't have to be exactly at one spot,
one mark.
And I don't even know if that's going to work.
So that they can get the light directly or specifically. It was very free for them. They had total freedom of movement and action. And it was very important for them not to be too trapped by the technique.
The point is that I'm the only one around.
And I love her like that.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And that shot that brings her in and then goes to the table and then goes to her single is probably my favorite shot in the film.
Yeah.
You think I'm crazy?
I mean, in terms of lighting, it's like when you go into a set and you're thinking about it, you take the finder and you're, the way you move the camera is the way I need to light. Typically, after that day, after that shot, I realized that I was lighting every part of this movie from a practical or from outside a window.
Sheriff,
yeah.
I'd like to talk to you. You know, he was Doug's best friend, so I'd advise against it.
It's fine.
That's something I learned from you, that too, and it's so good to do that because you can do a lot of things with the camera without having to redo the whole set and change everything. Look at how Robert looks small next to John.
Next to the sheriff.
The sheriff, that's the other bad guy. So the other challenge is that, okay, we have two killers, and he's the bad guy. He shouldn't look like a bad guy.
I just have a few questions that...
And these problems, he has to solve the case. You know, he's very happy that he can put everything on her and make her look bad. But he can't make her look bad. He has to be very subtle.
Which means he must have seen it coming.
That was something that we had a little argument about with the producers, is the way he goes and goes like, why did you do that to him? He was my friend. You couldn't, he loved you. You couldn't do it like that. And being very touched by the murder makes him one of the less suspicious characters in the movie. Well, and at the same time, he's the most powerful and the most strange.
Sheriff, that's enough.
No.
That's enough.
I need her to look me in the eye and tell me why she did it.
I loved him. He worked on Fargo. He was Francis McDormand's husband in Fargo, and I thought he was so powerful. He's huge. He's an amazing actor.
He's an amazing actor. He's extremely smart, and he has a similar quality that Robert has, which he has a subtlety that he uses. He adds depth to this character, like what you're saying. I mean, he's fronting,
Amanda, what's that?
But he actually, you can sense that he actually feels for his friend, even though he knows exactly what his friend was up to.
Exactly. Plus, they were partners in crime, so it makes sense that he was trying for him. Now we got the "Not Alone" on our arm, carved on our arm.
This music, cool, man.
That was the big reveal, the big scene of the movie that was so scary. And when I read the script, that was a scary moment. So when you read a scary script, the only thing you have to do is trying to get that feeling again. Why did you get scared? Why did it scare you? Without any visuals, just by reading it, you have to find that little feeling again. It's difficult. It's very interesting. Hallie was all over the place, and she's in it.
Yeah. She was pretty tired by week three.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, she gave it all, you know?
She gave it all.
She gave it up. That was sort of a climax of her intensity.
And she played by the rules, she played by our rules. She didn't understand sometimes what we were doing, but she trusted us, and she was really supportive and totally in character. Sometimes she was a little upset because I couldn't explain it to her, because I didn't really know sometimes what we were doing. It has to work. I don't exactly know how it will come out, but it has to work, and you gotta go with instinct. And she followed our instinct, and sometimes we followed her instinct too.
Hers, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And Roberts also, and Penelope too. We set up things that we couldn't get them to do because it didn't feel right. So now we're doing the flashback scene, all in reverse, with drops of water going back up, and she's going back from the moment of the murder to the moment where she met the ghost, and the ghost got into her. All those scenes, we didn't have time to set them properly, and we had to trust our instincts. And trying to make it visually as interesting as we could, and of course explaining everything to the audience so that they could understand. Hallie, when she was like convulsing here, she's crazy, man. She was like doing it all, totally. Oh, that was strong. For a director, it's a gift to have an actress who just has no limit and is ready to go all the way.
Right.
Please, take a seat.
It's perfect. Sometimes you have to calm everybody and trying to see exactly what you need. Or else you can really go far. But we're all about scaring people and not too much into the psychology. You know, complexity or anything.
This is another tough scene. This one here was a really tough scene for her, if you remember.
That scene was complicated to do, too.
Sit alone.
This is the next time you see, the only other time you see The Office, that was the only warm toned piece of the film. This is then, we tried to change it here and make it cold again so that Office still exists as a warm space.
But somebody else was there.
It's like if Doug was the devil,
Miranda.
And when you came in his office at the beginning, it's all hot and you can feel the heat.
We are your family now.
When you go back and it's Bernard Hill there and Doug is not there anymore, it's not the same mood. It didn't bring that feeling of...
You possibly can.
How you say that? Hell pit? You. Something like that?
And to make you feel...
Oh, a hell pit.
It was a nest of the evil. A hell pit.
You can trust us here.
Yeah, hell pit.
Hell pit. Not help it. Hell pit.
Miranda.
Just come on, sit down.
Miranda.
But, you know, we ended up starting this scene with a wide shot. And, like, Hallie was bringing it.
Oh, yeah.
In the first two takes. So we had to change up and shoot her closer up next.
Yeah. We started with the wide shot, and she was so into it.
No. This is the girl that I saw.
Then we had to change
this is
the
girl.
Way we wanted to shoot that scene because
she
gave us something that we didn't expect.
This is the girl I've been
seeing.
So
then it became all about her.
She's dead.
as the reveal with the girl.
Rachel died 4 years
ago. She's my daughter. She died 4 years ago. And we have the time-lapse shots that are actually very complicated to do because they are time-consuming. You have to shoot for 8 hours to get like 30 seconds of footage.
Or we just shot the sunset there. It probably took us about an hour.
Yeah, thank you very much for making me look bad.
It all depends. You're right. No, you know. It depends on the shot.
Now we have the second coming of the ghost in the cell.
Escape number one.
We had to take that glass out and put it back in. It's a very long shot, as you can see. And they had to put the glass and the reflection back in. For me, that's the first really scary moment.
I believe in science.
From there, it becomes a scary movie.
And I don't believe in ghosts.
This is a great sound. This is an amazing sound.
Ghost of Rachel Parsons.
Scares like that are made by timing. It's all about timing, meaning that when is it a ghost or not? And if it's a ghost, is he going to open the door or not? If he's going to open the door, when is he going to open the door? Is it now? When do you expect it as the audience? Do you expect it now? Do you expect it now? Or now? And it's all about tricking the audience by saying, okay, you expect it, you want it, you think it's coming, and no, it's not coming, so you can breathe, and now it's coming. I remember we did like a couple of different takes with a different timing for the opening of the door to get the most efficient one. It's all about playing with the audience, and you can hear it. We're in the theaters. People were jumping and then laughing because they got tricked and they liked it. That's the shot of the ghost walking that we shot like, what, 8 frames per second?
And with like 6 frames a second, we made her walk really slow.
And then she walked really slow, yeah. When she was running, she actually fell. So that set with the solitary cells, that was Maddie's set. It's all about light.
Well, the flickering light's something that recurs over the course of the film.
We discovered that while we were doing it, right?
Yeah, well, and then they realize that, you know, it works every time you're about to meet the ghost again, or at least the presence is felt of the ghost. Or if there's some type of communication between the ghost and Miranda, that light is sort of a signifier.
Yeah, electricity.
This is a great stunt right here. I love this.
Yeah, great stunt. Made by Charlene. And that's not a stunt, girl. That's Halle Berry. That's a shot that we made, the very complicated shot that we invented with Maddie, and the grips managed to get it because they had to put a crane on top of that set, and the set weren't made for it. We CGI'd that last part of mesh so that the camera could go through.
That we're moving through, yeah.
And then the camera had to be able to go under and be at their level and then go back on top of that set. They managed to get that in a very short amount of time.
That was Pierre. Pierre and Michelle. Amazing.
Pierre and Michelle,
she
ran
the wall. She did that herself.
And also for them, for the actors, it's a very long scene, very long shot to get right. With the technical problems around.
Yes. A tattoo, a woman, flames, hands up. Up like this.
It's always a mix of trying to get the actress to do exactly what you want, and at the same time, they have to work around the camera, and also the camera has to work around them.
It's the woman.
It's a game of give and take. Sometimes they get it, sometimes they're willing to go that direction, sometimes they don't get it because you don't give them the space that they need to act.
Don't you see how this image is tailor-made for your state of mind? A woman in purgatory.
It's complicated to do a technical movie with real characters and actors who actually gives a lot.
Well, I mean, that's like compounded with light that would be in the set would be that much more difficult for actors to actually get in sort of a headspace. You know, I mean, it's bad enough we have a crane on top of their set, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If we had lights in front of their face, it'd be another story, and it would be much tougher for them.
Exactly. Did that to that girl?
They're all wrong. Let's reopen the case.
Yeah, maybe they are. Maybe they should.
You know, the shot where they talking together, face to face. I love that because I said, okay, you got to argue, but I can't do one shots and go back and. I wanted to put them face to face, and they have to overlap each other all the time and keep their own ID, keep their own dialogue.
Transfer you to psych ward cell. One strike, you're going to solitary. Don't screw up.
Rachel Parsons was there. Dead?
Yeah, I love that shot because they are two different actors. As actors, they work in a totally different manner, so it was very interesting to confront them and to put them in situations where they had to almost show off, show what they could do facing the other.
Yeah, well, they had the rise of the occasion. They loved it.
They loved it, yeah. They loved that part. Because they knew. I love that shot with the volleyball and that woman. Same thing, we were in that backyard and said, okay, we got lunatics all over the place. Do we want them to start to dance in the background, or how can we make that without being too stupid?
Less is more.
Less is more. We got to thank Kim Barrett, the costume designer who worked on The Matrix. Who did an amazing job also. Because it's very stylistic, very stylish when you see the way they are dressed. The colors are totally coordinated and it's almost too much, but you don't actually see it. It looks like it could be real and it wasn't made for a movie.
Tell me his name, Chloe. Chloe, tell me anything.
So that thin line in between being over the top and
over stylized. That's the thing we worried about most. When we talked about the colors and we talked about the wardrobe and the color coordination, we thought we were being a little too over stylized. But if everything is moving in the same direction, I should say.
It's the girls. The actors make it look realistic because they are good. If they were bad actresses, then the whole thing would look stupid.
Well, I think that you have to have a consistency as well. You have a consistency with every aspect of it, and it's dedicated towards the same direction. You're going to have a unity, and that unity is going to hold true. Like, the atmosphere is true because everybody was in on it. And yeah, you're right. The performances had to be there as well.
Okay. Yeah, because they are not tacky. You know, if Penelope was tacky, and that, you know, because it could be a tacky scene. You know, he can have my body, but he'll never have my brain. He'll never have my soul. I heard that line before, and it can be tacky. But she was, they were good. So they made us look good. And especially we could afford, when we understood that level, then we could afford to go a little over the top, and it will still look almost realistic.
Try to stay awake.
Yes, ma'am.
If you need me, I'll be in the coffee room.
Because to make a scary movie really scary, the audience has to relate to something. You can't just bring them to another world that never existed. And you have to relate to it, or else you'll never get scared. And now we got that scene, the fighting scene in that cell. I wanted to get from a normal, regular cell to a, you know, she goes down. In the original, no, she has three cells in the movie. Yeah. The glass cell, that cell, and the last cell in the police precinct.
Right.
And that cell was so small, was so tiny. It was like, how can you get, you know, 30 crew members in that cell?
How could we do what we had to do? It was a really difficult set, for sure.
Yeah.
And we had to pad it because of what we were going to do.
The walls were all padded because she had to bang the walls. Boom. That was the biggest scare of the movie.
Yeah.
I heard people screaming, like, without any sound or anything, just people screaming and not, you know, without stopping.
Absolutely.
And that shot was from an Italian movie.
That's great.
All the fight.
Little wire work.
Little wire work, yeah. Complicated wire work. And all that, that's on location too. That shaft, that security shaft was so tiny. We couldn't even, you know, we had a couple of scenes in there. You couldn't get three people in it.
No. And you had to come up a circular staircase so you could barely get a camera through.
Exactly.
But the setting is amazing.
The setting?
The setting of that space, which is the common space of the prison.
Yeah.
We're going to see it again.
Yeah, we're going to see it again. We're going to see her running through the whole thing. And it's actually the real way it's made. When we discovered that set, that location, it was perfect. And every day we opened a new door and we discovered a new set, something new. A new room.
Damn, what a mess.
Hold her, I'm going to medicate her.
What the hell for? She's already out.
Don't argue with me. Dude.
Action.
This is a great one. This little stunt here.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a gamer. What can you say, you know?
Yeah. So that's all real. That's the way it was done. The way that place was. With like barefoot.
But she refused to wear shoes.
For my first movie with a superstar, I was like, okay, I'm destroying that girl. I was like, what's going on?
I want to do it again.
And Hallie wanted to do everything.
Well, she would have climbed down the chain link, but I don't think she would have done the fall.
No, not the fall, but that. She wanted to do everything. So, as we said, it's important at the beginning of the movie that we understand the geography of that place, so that we understand there is a pool, she knows how to get there, and from that pool, if she manages to get out of that pool, she will see Joe, the guard at the entrance, and we know the relationship she has with him, so we'll understand that he helps her to get out. And the same thing, when we saw that set, that location, it was, as you see, the pool is almost overflowing. And if you jump in it, then the guys will see the ripples, right? It was not even written in the script. She said, now she's hiding in the water. But when you got there, you realize that, oh, she can't really jump in it. She has to go slow. So we can play a suspense scene here. We can play a little more with the suspense of how to be fast and at the same time.
Trying to hide in water.
Trying to hide as fast with less movement as she can.
This whole thing was lit with moving lights, with concert lights that were rigged about 30 feet up in the air because we didn't have enough space around the pool to do any lighting, and we didn't have the time. So we pre-rigged all these moving lights.
That you got that from music videos, right?
Nah, man, I just thought of that.
No, but that's a technique because you use light from like concert lights because they were on remotes because you could move them.
Yeah, everything was on dimmer.
Yeah, but they are not lights that you use on sets normally.
No, not at all.
They're like totally for concert. I was surprised about that. I've never seen a DP using lights like that before.
Well, remember, I mean, I spent every week up until this point trying to get us to another location because that location was almost impossible to light. And the only way to do it was to rig lights above.
Yeah, there was walls everywhere. Four walls and a pool of water in the middle, and almost no space, no walking space.
We built this amazing rig that had a camera floating over the pool, and we ended up. Remember that rig?
Yeah, we had to
de-rig it.
What do you mean, what do I mean?
We had to de-rig it. Why did we have to de-rig it?
Because we couldn't find a shot with it.
Oh, we couldn't find a shot.
The scene was set up to follow Hallie swimming in a pool, and she couldn't swim.
And she couldn't swim, yeah, of course.
Hey, Joe. Hmm? You see something?
Yeah, just now when the...
Oh,
when
Joe.
The
Joe in love.
4 to 6.
Hey, Joe in love.
Always escape scenes in a movie like that are, you know, easy to write, difficult to direct because it has to make sense that she can get out of a prison. And at the same time, it's not the story, so you don't want to lose time with it. That's why we wanted to make the whole thing logical at the beginning. And if you look at it again, then you'll see that the way she walks through the prison at the beginning, it's almost the same thing that she does when she escapes. There's two escapes. There's the first escape when she gets caught after she sees the ghost, after she sees the guy with the tattoo in Chloe's cell. And she goes from the corridor to her office, and to Pete's office, and then to the solitary cells that we've seen before. But it was very important to get that right at the very beginning so that we lost time explaining it after. Now we have the running escape scene with the car.
In the giant field. That was a big scare. The rear view mirror was a big scare.
Really?
Well, I mean, everybody told me it was.
Yeah. And then we had the scene, and we said, okay, we have a scene with a ghost taking over a car, and what are we going to do? We can't have, like, the car, like, driving strangely. It's just the brakes don't work, and a truck is coming the other way, and is it just the car, or is it the ghost? Still, we don't know if it's in her head or if it's real, and we don't know what's going on yet.
What do you want from me?
I love that scare. That one that's coming up now with the music.
Yeah.
And the red light, the braking light.
That was a pickup. We shot that shot on the stage.
Yeah.
That whole sequence was done digitally. We had to color it digitally because of the way we had to light that scene.
Yeah, because you had to have the lights in the shots. So we had to take the lights out after.
The light had to be so broad to cover such a great space that we couldn't... You don't model light in that scenario. So we modeled it later by timing background separately and sort of painting it, really. Painting shadow in and then creating the brightest spots where the vehicles were.
That's brand new, to be able to use CGI and technology not to make monsters or destroy buildings or airplanes, but just to hide things that you couldn't hide. If you didn't have CGI, then some of these shots couldn't be made because it couldn't be possible.
Wouldn't be possible. It's sort of like, it sort of frees us to be able to think of shots that would normally not be able to happen.
Exactly.
And it did that many times for us. I think that the producers probably had a certain amount of effect shots going in, but then we added some because in the nature of our shots, we were going to deal with reflection, we were going to deal with big spaces. Yeah,
we had to, because we had to do it fast. That scene when she walks up to her house and you can hear her breathing, it was so cold and she was wet and it was really, really cold. I was upset because we had to shoot that and it was still winter in Canada, and winter in Canada is no joke. And she had to wear just a wet t-shirt, and she managed to get that.
You know, this reminds me, I misspoke earlier when I said that Doug's office was the only warm space in the film, because this house, which is sort of representative of Doug and her as a couple, is also warm. So everything in this house is pretty
Doug?
Warm as well.
Yeah. Sometimes we do things without even understanding how, why, but the choices that we make sense. We don't even... know why, but
we don't really know why.
You made everything Doug a little warmer.
And it's funny because it's like goes back to what we were saying about prep. I didn't prep this film like I've prepped any other film. I just physically did not have the time. So it's just about getting on the same page in terms of what the overall view of the movie should be, and then just reacting.
Yeah. Now we have the nightmare, when she relives everything that happened.
This is a great moment where she sees herself.
Yeah. And I love that, to have Halle Berry
with an axe,
axing the rock. That was amazing. He was amazing too, because we put him in very, very uncomfortable situations and positions, and he had to stay there for hours and with a fake legs and blood all over him, and he was so nice. I love that. That's my 2001 little scene. The bathtub filled with blood and her in it.
The blood.
It feels like The Shining. I don't know why. I was like, for me, I always thought about The Shining for that. The Shining, which is for me one of the scariest movies.
I love that shot. Here comes an effect shot that's going to be an effect shot. The morph.
The morph, yeah.
When she gets up. But the I love the shot of her in the mirror, though.
Yeah. Same thing. When we did that shot, the original shot with Hallie, you know, she had to do it totally and to be like that. But when you shoot it, it's quite ridiculous because you have an actress going, ah, and we had, and I told her to do like for a minute. And because we were like shooting high speed, so she had to do it a lot. And she did, I don't know how many takes, and she was dizzy at the end of every take because she was screaming so loud. Couldn't stop her. She made the movie, I think.
I like this a little bit.
Oh, you had a problem with that.
What, the picture?
I pissed you off with that. Because that's a 180 shot. 180 degree shot.
Yeah, I know.
And you couldn't put any lights anywhere. You had the shade from the Steadicam.
The shadow. Yeah.
Operator. Shadow from a Steadicam operator on her. So you had to lower the light and put it back in after and made it very complicated.
It's just a puzzle you have to figure out. You'll see that the key light flips in that shot because what we're doing is cross-fading light.
Yeah. Because I tricked you.
Yeah.
I didn't take the right take. I told you that I was going to take the one where you were perfect, but I didn't.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, directors never do.
Yeah. We don't give a damn. You're the guy who they're going to see and say, hey, I saw your light flickering. What happened? And that scene, when the first time we went on location to find that barn, remember?
Yeah.
It was covered in snow. All white. Totally beautiful. Dark trees. Snow everywhere. And the sun was set in a specific place when we got there and cast like a specific shadow, and I said that this is how I can get my scare. It was complicated, but remember, the sun was casting a shadow exactly where I wanted so that we could make the girl appearing behind her for the rest of the scene after.
Yeah, between the house and the barn.
That's, yeah, right here at the barn. But then when we got back, it was like 3 months after, and it was totally different set. Totally different. So we had to change the scares there again to adapt to the set and to adapt to the situation. Barns, I don't know about you, but of course barns are a real pleasure to light. And that one is beautiful. I love that. You know, in a movie like that, you have to have your owl shot or your cat shot or something like that. It's a game. I'm surprised sometimes I see people say, oh, I was so scared by the owl. I was like,
you gotta be kidding me.
I was waiting for that owl for like the first hour of the movie. You know, something is gonna jump at some point. I love what John Ottman, the composer, did with that scene.
Yeah.
Especially when she goes under. I love that. I love the way it's built. I'm sitting in a theater and I'm looking at that. I'm exactly where she is. Like, what's going on? I'm here. Something told me to come here. I don't see anything. And then digital video camera? Why? Aha! A passage to another world. And I love the music here. I could hear people laughing in the theaters. Joel Silver is a great fan of... He loves that kind of tricks and to play with what you want the audience to believe in and trust. her. She couldn't raise that door. We had to have somebody under pushing it. And hear the music going. And you expect something is going to jump at you and nothing. And then John had a little music here. And Joel said, you know what? When she gets in, let it be like almost no music, like just silence and keep on like that. And he was right. The good thing about this movie is that we all work together. Nobody worked by itself. We all got together. There was no ego involved, right?
No. No, I would say, I mean, at least, like, I wasn't that involved in the post-production end, but where I was involved, I mean, Eric Henry would always keep me in the loop with the visual effects, and Richard Mirisch would keep me in the loop as much as possible with everything that I had to be related to. And then in prep, we had a lot of, you know, we had a lot of the tools that we needed. It's because we were communicating constantly about what we needed to perform, you know.
Yeah. It's nice to make movies in a very short amount of time, and you have to run, you have to do it. You have to jump every morning, you have to invent on set and find ideas, so that you need to work with somebody. You can't do it yourself. You have to work with your crew, you have to get ideas from people you're working with. You can't just do it yourself, and that's a great...
Well, we had an amazing crew as well. I mean, from my end...
Yeah, amazing.
Technically, I had one of the best crews I've ever had on a film, and I can't say enough about the guys in Montreal.
Yeah, yeah.
I like this music cue because we hear it, this one piece. I think we heard it early and hearing it now.
I think it's like almost like a 15-minute piece because it's music after another and keeps on. John really surprised me because he worked on a short notice. He worked on a very short notice and he delivered. Totally understood what we were doing. She got the knife and now she's going to get jumped by the cop.
Oh, here we go.
We walked on the set and I was like, I didn't know how to make that girl appear because in the original script she was appearing outside. Allie was running outside and then she found the cops and the cops found her and the girl was just supposed to walk out and jump on Allie outside. And we couldn't do it because the set wasn't working outside. So we had to do it inside and we found it almost a couple of days before. I was walking down the set and I was like, I saw the stairs and I say, if she's back to the stairs, then she can we can have a scare. Here.
All I can tell you is that the girl has been identified as Tracy Sievers. She was reported missing by her parents 2 weeks ago. She was found alive early this morning by two patrolmen in Willow Creek at a farm that belonged to Dr. Douglas Griffin. She is currently hospitalized.
Is she able to speak? Has she told you anything useful?
We can't comment on her condition.
Sheriff, are there other victims?
We can't confirm that. Excuse me?
Sheriff, is it true the FBI is taking over this investigation?
It's just the goddamn FBI.
Sheriff.
We need her back in the hospital.
Oh, you're joking.
Sheriff, I think you need to consider supervised house arrest pending given the news.
And that's a very long steady cam shot.
Dropped a guard, assaulted a nurse.
Large aperture rack.
And then stole a car.
An 8-stop aperture rack or something.
When you get in.
How does she know that girl was there? You tell me that.
I have no idea, but the point is...
The point is that the woman is still a murder suspect.
Poor lawyer has two scenes, and every time he says, the point is, then you have somebody saying, no, the point is...
Yes, more victims.
Hallie's saying that. Say, no, the point is, you're the only one who thinks, I'm the only one who thinks I didn't kill my husband. And here he just says, no, the point is, she's still a murder suspect.
He can't get a word in edgewise.
Yeah, exactly. I love that.
I want him to sign my Full Metal Jacket disc, though.
Oh, me too, man. I gotta buy a helmet.
I need to talk to her.
Ah, this scene.
That was...
Another dialogue scene.
It's hard to believe Doug did something like this.
That scene, like, because that's an hour and 15 minutes in the movie, and that's typically the explanation scene. That's the scene where you are going to understand something. and it's two people at a table. Very boring to shoot. Not interesting at all for us as technicians. And very dangerous for the writer and for the actors, because you have to be interesting, and at the same time you don't say a lot of interesting things because you're giving a lot of info.
And all this time,
remember, we tried to shoot that scene like four times before we actually did it.
Yeah.
You see, even after she was gone.
Because the movie was evolving, and so the explanations has to evolve at the same time. And a movie, when you don't have a lot of time to prep it, movies are always like that, but the shorter notice,
eventually
it becomes interactive.
Pluck it out.
What kind of dream?
She was burning in flames, in terrible pain. I couldn't save her.
I saw her exactly the same way. Burning in flames. What does that mean?
Miranda, I...
Plus, sometimes you discover things by shooting them, and you realize that a character is
a
way more ambiguous than you thought it was, and then you're going to change things so that you can play with it.
You know, I have to say, this is the most standard in terms of coverage that we played any scene, the dialogue and information in the entire film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Pete, I was just talking to Parsons. I realize I've been wrong about everything up until now. It's finally clear.
But you can't really be inventive on scenes where you don't have to.
Connected to these murders, and
sometimes you have to just set it down.
Miranda, you have to stop doing this.
You know, I love the way he answers the phone there.
Every time people start taking
you know, he answers it on the camera side.
About all these delusions again.
Yeah, the first time he's on the camera side.
I'm possessed.
Next time I see him, I'm going to ask him why he did that. When he did it, I saw it, I was like, this guy's a genius.
Great, just great. Let's go. Come on.
And that cop, he was so big.
Well, he's a big dude.
We tried to use him as maybe as a bait, as a...
He's a way
you know, he might be the bad guy, too. He didn't actually work because we didn't really pay attention on him.
We didn't have enough time to develop another character, either.
Yeah.
Or establish another character at the beginning.
But he could have been.
We had a hard time. We wanted, you know, the natural place to want to end this film stylistically would be the prison, but we just couldn't, story-wise, we just couldn't get back there.
Yeah, we tried to. We tried. We had, like, different endings with all the women escaping and killing the sheriff all together in a very nightmarish way and horrible. But the movie evolved, and I started to really like the cop. After a while, I thought that, you know, it might not be bad to get out of that prison, to go back to another cell somewhere else, to go back to the real world for a moment.
It also didn't make sense to put her in a prison that she escaped from twice, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Almost three times, because she almost escaped the first one.
I want to talk about the facts. They're a little different now, right?
This is where the flickering light thing sort of works and doesn't work. In one sense, you have this flickering light, and then you have the sheriff.
Yeah.
Not alone.
If you're in tune with what the flickering light represents, you know something's up when he walks in, which is probably not the feeling that you should have. It should probably still be kind of a reveal for the really dense people in the audience.
But that's the feeling that she has. She opens her eyes, she sees the light flickering, she says, oh, damn, is she coming back? Is the ghost there again?
And then it's him.
Get it.
He goes here, and it's just him. He just turned on the light, and the neon, you know, flickered before they turned on.
You told Pete?
Yes.
But we're going to play with it again at the end of that scene.
You know why?
Means that the ghost is there almost all the time.
Well, I don't think you're crazy at all. I don't know.
I think John's amazing in this scene, too.
You actually saw this tattoo with your own
eyes. Yes, I saw it.
on a man.
Same thing in the script. It's killers, 10 minutes long, and two people sitting in a cell.
So willing for the disciples.
Yes.
To make that choreography in between the characters and how the way they move.
Kind of guy with
we had to make him coming in that cell in a very subtle way.
He would have to be someone.
You know, if he opens the door and sits next to her, he's so big and that we're gonna know that he's the bad guy. Now you know that something is wrong with him.
An obsessive.
You don't really know what it is.
Relationship with his mother.
And it's not dangerous now.
Some inappropriate sexual attraction. He probably even got off torturing little.
The scene starts with him just walking in, and we, like, what we did, and there's three parts really to the scene where he first introduces himself there, and then this where he's sitting outside and she's inside, and then when he's inside. So we changed the shutter angle on the camera where we started at a normal shutter angle of 180 degrees, which is normal.
Yeah.
But
the next time we get there, it was a 90. It was a little skinnier, which was creating another, so just kind of an alternate motion.
Yeah.
And then by the time we get into the cell with her, it's at 45, which is very skinny, which is actually shooting less frames, which is creating sort of a stuttering effect than those familiar with camera would know.
Like the beginning of Saving Private Ryan with the technique that they use.
Yeah, but I found that by instinct.
You change the width of the shutter, and it makes the image a little more crispy. And here, even on static shots like that, you can feel that there's a little difference. Something is a little different.
But he didn't confess.
Maybe he didn't.
The light here is beautiful, too.
It's all in an effort to try to create sort of a transition within this, like, 10-page scene.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways to confess.
But all that, we did that with the actors, remember?
Yeah.
We sat down with the actors and we said, okay, so how would you think he would get in the cell? When is she going to realize that he's the bad guy, you know? And all that scene were made with the actors.
You mean take
we worked
care.
Together before we shot it because it was difficult. It's the reveal of the movie, the last moment. You don't want to spoil it. You have to keep it as classy as you can. And at the same time, still, it can be tacky as hell. And and the actors managed to get away from it.
Talk to me.
Well, you're right. I do fit the profile. Longtime friend of Doug's, access to the prison. I never did get a kick out of torturing animals, though.
Boom. Here you can even see what skinny shutter can do.
Yeah.
Yes!
I love that line. Yes.
Yes.
Kill me!
I'm not gonna kill you. But after this kick, I'm gonna have a lot more fun with you than Doug ever did.
Here, the needle that he hands, it's a CGI needle because it's too close to her eye, so we couldn't use it, a real one. It's little things like that nobody sees.
Don't ask me why this red light exists. It just does.
Because, yeah, you have to have your red light in a scary movie. You have to.
Just like we need an owl.
Exactly. And here you see Hallie, you know, pounding on the glasses. That was the first take. She couldn't do it again for a second take because she hurt her arm. She just did it all the way. I said, maybe you should take care of yourself for a while. She said, I can't. If I do it, I do it. I was like, all right.
Okay.
So do it, but be careful.
Yeah.
You tried to escape.
Sometimes I had to tame it down and say, no, okay, calm down. Let's not do it like that. We'll do it in a different way. She just wanted to get it right.
Yeah, exactly. At a certain point, her performance takes over.
Yeah.
It's something to watch. It's amazing to watch.
Doug killed a girl when he was 15 years old.
We can't say enough about her.
I helped him bury the body.
If we would have started that commentary with her, talking about her, we would still be talking about her now.
What are best friends for?
All we did was talk about her.
Everybody was in love. Everybody fell in love with her.
Exactly.
And it's not because she's a very beautiful woman. It's because she's a very beautiful woman.
We stopped.
She has a lot of things, and she's a great person.
Beautiful person.
So sweet, right?
She gave a lot to everybody in the crew, and everybody gave her a lot of respect for what she brought.
And then, we had the time of our lives out at Willow Creek. Everything was perfect. Those girls would do anything. We were their god. until you...
That last part, that last scene...
Surrender!
With him and the fire, we had a problem with that last part of the movie, not exactly knowing what we wanted to do and how to get it. And I took that direction saying, you know, there is fire, women in fire in purgatory, and he's the bad guy. The movie's called Gothica. He should die in hell. He should die in flames.
Thank you, Miranda.
I didn't want the movie to end in the more common way. You know, it's just a confrontation between the good guy and the bad guy.
Me too.
It has to be a little more gothic. But that scene was made while we were shooting it, and a lot in post.
Are you happy with this ending?
I'm happy with the ending. The only thing I'm not happy with is that we didn't have time to perfect the CGIs for that. And we had to change a little of the cut to make it realistic. I had the idea of having him in fire, not knowing what's going on because he's drugged. And took that and make it way more longer, and maybe make the flames running around him in a ghostly manner.
I mean, I would almost go the opposite direction and say that if we had more time, we'd work on making the flames look, you know, a little more real.
More realistic.
Those guys did an amazing, they did an amazing job, but it's like...
Yeah, they did an amazing job for the amount of time that they had. But that was the big question. If we had time, then we could have tried with a very strange flames, and then if it didn't work, then we would have time to change it.
Right.
But we couldn't play with that. We couldn't do that.
But it's also interesting. Because I think that the sort of the direction to go into the Gothica, you know, have him burn in flames. The one thing is I wish we had was a location that suited that concept.
Yeah.
A police station that suited that. That's the only thing that really bothers me about the end, because we never got that matchup. The whole film has a consistency, and then that police station just... We did the best we could with that space, but it doesn't really hold the atmosphere that we had worked so hard to get to.
No, it's different from the rest of the movie, yeah.
It's been almost a year, and I still have bad dreams. Sometimes I wake up screaming.
That's normal.
No, not these dreams. Everyone thought you and I were crazy. But we were seeing the truth, more than they could see. Once you open the door, you can never close it.
Not true. I closed it. Then I locked it. And then I threw away the key.
I really hope that's true.
I'm not unhappy with it. I kind of like
my
it.
Train leaves
I kind of like the B-movie ambiance to it.
I'll catch you on your way.
I'm a big fan of B-movies and Z-movies. And, you know, that movie is inspired by all these movies.
You got that.
We got that, yeah.
Thank you for what you did.
I like it because I'm a fan, a really big fan of these movies. I don't know about people who don't know these movies, but I really like it.
Right.
I like that with the two girls.
Yeah, we got to actually light them nice. That was a nice day. I took a lot of Polaroids that day.
Yeah. They look so good.
They were amazing.
Plus, that was the first time that they could look good in the movie.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, they were so happy to look that good and to be able to wear regular clothes that they could choose.
Regular clothes.
Exactly. They could choose it. I like the music here. The way it brings the...
It's nice.
The next step. And I like that ending.
No, the ending is good.
Yeah. It could be dumb. It could be like it's strange. You know, it works because it's simple. The good thing about it, it's simple and it's unpretentious. It plays by the rule of the genre, you know. We're almost setting up Gothica 2.
Yeah.
And we know that there is no Gothica 2 right now because it's not that kind of movie. I'd love to see a TV series with a psychiatrist who sees ghosts. And when somebody comes to her and says...
Why are you out of your mind?
Huh?
You're out of your mind.
No, it should be that.
You're funny, man.
What it's like to be the bad man.
So we gotta say thanks to Hallie, Robert, Charles Dutton, Carl Lynch, Penelope, Bernard Hill,
John Carroll Lynch,
Bernard Hill and everybody, all the technicians,
the crew in Montreal,
everybody in Montreal,
John Lewin, Jeff Scott, Michel Perriard.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Pierre, Paul.
I gotta say, even Don Carmody.
Nico, Francois Daniel,
Don Carmody. And you, man.
Thank you.
We gotta thank Joel Silver.
Thank you, Joel Silver.
Or else we'll never work in this town again.
Susan Levine.
Susan Levine, yeah.
Susan Levine, too, man. Susan Levine, she rocks. Richard Mirisch.
Richard Mirisch. Richard Mirisch is the bomb.
Eric Henry. We had a great, you know what? We had a great time making the film. That's all I can say. We had a great time making the film.
And thank you very much, Maddie. I hope I'll work with you again.
Thank you. Let's make it soon.
Yeah, let's make it soon, yeah. And for you, lovely audience, we'll see you in a year or two with a new blockbuster. And you can buy your tickets right now on my website.
They're going to cut that one out. All right, man. I think we're done. Can't show through, but my dreams, they aren't as empty as my conscience seems to be. I have hours only lonely. My love is vengeance. Let's never discover. How to say that they're sorry, and don't worry, I'm not telling lies, but my dreams, they aren't as empty as my conscience seems to be. I have hours only lonely. My love is vengeance that's never free. No one knows what it's like to be the bad man, the sad man behind blue.